I think we're as ready as we will be to kick off with Jerome. Take it away.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you for coming after lunch, a free lunch. I've always been told there is no such thing as a free lunch, so I wonder what the attached strings are. So who am I? My name is Jeroen Freiters. It's phonetically spelled out there. I'm a co-founder of Sumatra Software, a small ISV in the Netherlands. And as a hobby project, which started out in my company but sort of got out of hand, I work on the open source IKVM.net project. And the reason for this is, or what it is first, it's a Java VM, or it attempts to be a Java VM, because it's still not 100% compatible, but there are some minor issues. But it attempts to be a Java VM on top of the .NET framework and Mono as well. And it also has a static compiler that allows you to take a Java jar, compile it into a .NET DLL assembly or executable, and then use that from your .NET application. And it also includes a port of the OpenJDK class library. As you may be aware of, a couple of years ago, Sun, before they were bought by Oracle, decided to open source Java. And this is called OpenJDK, and this is the entire Java platform, including the hotspot compiler and the class libraries. And I use parts of the class libraries, the non-native parts, to have all the class libraries available, and I replace all of the native parts by the equivalent .NET code. So what's its current compatibility? It's, like I said, there are some minor little things that preclude me from legally calling it Java, but really you should think of it as the complete Java VM. And most of the class libraries, and there are some holes in the class libraries, things like Swing, AWT, fonts, graphics, and printing. So all the UI-related stuff is not, it's there, but it's sort of functional. So it's mostly aimed at reusing libraries. So if you have some library that does text indexing or searching or compression or, I don't know, voice analysis, whatever, semantic analysis, you can take that library, compile it, and then reuse it from within your .NET application. If you have something that has a graphical user interface, then you may be lucky, you may not be lucky. I tend to not work that much on this stuff, but there is another contributor who does work on it, so it does get improved, but he doesn't spend as much time on it as I do on the project itself. So, surprising number of incompatibilities actually result from people writing non-Java applications. So they write Sun or now Oracle specific applications. So they don't target the Java platform, but they target a specific implementation. Or actually, because the most popular implementations of Java are actually licensees of the Oracle code base, or Sun Oracle code base, it works on them as well most of the time. So these are the infamous Sun packages, for example. And then there's the class loader problem, which I'll get into later. So a small aside. So one of the reasons this can be done on .NET is because there is something called system.reflection, and system.reflection has an app domain.type resolve event. Back when I started doing this, I was actually kind of surprised that it was possible on .NET 1.0 to build something like a JIT, because what IKVM in dynamic mode does is it reads Java class files and then essentially JIT compiles them into .NET types. And because when you're compiling a type, you're also loading in new class files. You don't want to compile all of the dependencies immediately. So you just sort of say to the runtime, there is this type, but I'm not going to tell you anything about it yet. It just exists. And then whenever the runtime needs the type, because it is JIT compiling at its level, the code, it will call you back via this type resolve event and says, okay, you said to me this type foo is supposed to exist, but I don't know anything about it, so please give me the details of this foo object. In some sense, this is similar to how Java class loading worked, of course, because there you get the same thing. The VM calls the class loader saying, I need this particular class. And then I started using system.reflection very, very heavily. And I ran into some limitations. So eventually, a couple of years ago in 2007, I started this project in 2002, by the way, so I've been working on it for 10 years already. And in 2007, I think 2007, I finally decided, okay, there are too many limitations in system reflection. I'm forced to use it in dynamic mode, but in static mode, where I'm just compiling as a normal compiler in essence, I don't have to use it, so I'll write my own. And I cloned the reflection API so that I could use the code as is mostly, and just use some small if-defs at the top of the code that says, say, using system.reflection or else using ikvm.reflection. So this is a nice side effect of this project. And it, I think it has the potential of becoming more popular than IKVM itself. IKVM reflection is really nice if you've gone down the road of building a managed compiler for .NET and using system.reflection, and then you bang into the wall of saying, okay, now I want to add an additional feature that reflection doesn't support, and there's no way to extend reflection because it's just a black box inside the runtime. You can plug in IKVM reflection. It'll only take you a couple of hours to port your code base, and then you can start taking advantage of the additional functionality. And because it's an open source thing, if you need anything else, you can just add it, or you can ask me to add it. And this is now used in the Mono C# compiler. The Mono C# compiler is based on system.reflection, and they had actually the luxury of, because they used their own system.reflection implementation in the Mono runtime, they added a bunch of private APIs to the system.reflection implementation in Mono, specifically for the compiler. But even then, they still had a very good reason to switch over to IKVM reflection, and that is when you use reflection, you're forced to target the same runtime version as your compiler runs on, because MS CoreLib, the core of the platform, is always the one that you're running with. With IKVM reflection, you can load any arbitrary MS CoreLib, so now the Mono compiler is just a single binary that can target Silverlight, or Moonlight, as they call it, .NET 2.0, .NET 4.0, .NET 4.5, well, all the different versions of .NET. And then the Scala.NET port is using it, I think. And then the NumerLib people are using it, all sorts of stuff, good stuff. So what are some of the interesting challenges when you start doing a project like this? Early on, I decided to make this to get back to the previous presentation, it's a tool, it's not a toy. So it needs to perform really, really well. And that means, for me, that wrappers are out of the question. So you cannot create additional objects. You cannot go around wrapping arrays and strings and things like that. So there is a sort of complicated type system mapping going on. There is, in the Java world, there is this object called cli.system.object, and it extends Java long object. And this is, of course, not really true on the .NET side, because cli.system.object is just system.object. And then on the .NET side, Java long object extends system.object. So there's a sort of a cross inheritance going on, apparently. But of course, that's mostly fake. The Java long object does extend system.object, but I consider that an implementation detail. So whenever you're referencing objects in your .NET code, you should continue to use system.object, because if you use Java long object, then you're tying yourself into a particular implementation of a Java object, and you want to say any object. So for example, an array does not extend Java long object. An array is just a .NET array, so it extends system.object. And in practice, this is not really a problem. Only when you want to instantiate a Java long object for some reason, then you can say new Java long object, but otherwise in your C# code you would never say Java long object. So string, Java long string, is just a container for some static methods. System.string is used wherever Java long string is used in Java code. And here you see why you shouldn't be talking about Java long object for another reason. The exception thing does basically the same thing as the object thing, but to interoperate nicely with other languages, I want Java long throwable to extend system.exception. That is not actually required in .NET, so in Java, to be able to be thrown as an exception, you need to extend throwable, but in .NET, you can throw any type of object. But I don't really want to do that. I want to interoperate nicely with other languages, so I've derived throwable from system.exception, and on the .NET side, you have cli.system.exceptions extends Java long throwable, exception, I should say. One other thing to get into, the CLI prefix, where does that come from? It's the common language infrastructure, and I picked that because of a very simple, stupid reason. everything is in the system namespace in .NET, or not everything, but all the runtime stuff is in the system namespace, and Java really doesn't like system namespace, because there is such a thing as Javalang system, which is a class, and the Java C compiler always assumes that you mean system, the Javalang system class, instead of the system namespace. So that's the real reason I prefixed everything. Some people complained to me about this, and some people said, well, why don't you lowercase the name to be more Java-like and things like that? But I'm very obsessed with making everything work. So IKVM, like I said, it's not a toy, it's a real tool. This means that when you throw really bizarro class files at it, it should work. If you are playing overloading games by reusing names and stuff, it will work. It will mangle the names if it has to. It will try not to, but it will do so if it has to. So I almost see it like an adversarial issue. It should be impossible to write Java code that intentionally doesn't want to run on IKVM. The only way you should be able to detect you're on IKVM is by getting a system property Java VM name or something like that. So there are some other nasty things in the type system, because, like I said, string and array are just the underlying .NET things, but in Java and in .NET as well, string and array also implement interfaces. And some interfaces are really easy. There's Java IO serializable, which is an empty marker interface, so that's easy, relatively easy to fake. There's Javalang clonable, which is also an empty marker interface. But there's also Javalang comparable, which sort of looks like system.icomparable, and string implements system.icomparable. So I mapped these two interfaces on top of each other and thought everything is nice and dandy. But then I discovered that the Javalang string comparable methods, which is the implementation of Javalang comparable, is actually over-specified. So the compare method in the interface just says it returns a negative value, zero, or a positive value. But the string implementation says, no, it returns the difference between the two different characters. And .NET doesn't implement that. So I had to actually special case this. So whenever you call the compare method via this interface, it first does an instance of check to see if it's a string. If it's a string, it calls a static helper method. Otherwise, it calls the interface method. So that's a bit nasty. So as I was doing this, like I said, I want to avoid any native code because I want it to be a real .NET application. When you compile something with IKVM, you get a platform-independent .NET application. So there is no native code there. So you can run on 32-bit, 64-bit. If you use Mono, you can run on all different sorts of architectures. Recently, last week, someone announced that Michael Bain ported it to iOS, so to MonoTouch, so you can now run Java code or some subset of Java code on your iPad or iPhone via IKVM running on top of Mono, all statically compiled. All statically compiled to native code, by the way, because iOS doesn't support any type of jitting. So that's pretty cool. But in order to facilitate this, I need to rip out all of the C code and replace it by either C# code or Java code. And sometimes it's convenient to write the native parts in Java. And so when I started this project, it became sort of obvious to me that I needed to add some support for exposing .NET stuff to Java. Originally, the idea was to just take the jar and then reuse it in .NET. But it also kind of makes sense to be able to write Java code targeting the .NET framework, so being able to call .NET APIs. So I started adding more and more features and exposing more and more features of the .NET framework, and then you run, of course, into interesting stuff, like delegates, pyref, method arguments, custom attributes, value types, enums, properties and events, and some of these are harder than others to implement. So let's have a look. You can now actually, this is a relatively new feature, you can now even define your own delegate type in Java. And a particularly cool thing is, can this thing point actually? A particularly cool thing is that you can implement an interface. So this is something that is not available in C# or most managed languages. But the CLR allows you when you derive your own delegate from multicast delegate to say, okay, I'm implementing a runnable interface. So I created in my own class library, I created a bunch of these helper thingies that make it easy to interoperate between Java and, or between C Sharp, I should say, or any .NET language, and Java. So this delegate, when you specify this delegate in a method, and there is a static helper method that just takes this thing and then returns the same thing, essentially, but that will allow you to have to instruct it to the C Sharp compiler, for example, create me a delegate of this particular type, runnable delegate, and then it automatically implements this runnable interface so that Java code that expects something to, that implements runnable, for example, a thread, can take that delegate and immediately call it. And then you avoid the overhead of having to write another wrapper object because the delegate is the same thing. And that's just a cool feature. So here's this this method, the static method I talked about. So it doesn't really do anything. It just takes the runnable delegate to instruct the C# compiler to create one of these, and it returns the runnable interface that you can then pass into your thread or whatever. So here's an example of that. This is C# code that creates a Java thread. So one thing that is, in my opinion, sorely lacking in the JVM, all the alternatives that are considering, they're nice features, they're considering tuples and stuff, but I think BIREF method arguments is something that is just an essential part of the platform, and it's something that is really annoying that it's missing in Java. So in Java, what do you do when you need to return multiple values? Typically, you pass in a single element array. So what IKVM does, it simulates that as well. And of course, this is one of those things where there's really a lot of friction because you have to allocate an extra array. And if you pass these things to different methods, you can actually notice that the arrays, the wrapper arrays, are different. It would be nice to use generics instead of the array hack, but because generics are erased in Java, that creates another set of problems which makes it hard to do method overloading properly without mangling. And that's, in my opinion, even uglier because if you look at the standard class library, you encounter a lot of cases already where this is needed, where you need to mangle. And it's hard to mangle in a predictable way. So one of the really nasty things about name mangling is that it works fine in a one-off situation, but as soon as something changes, the mangling tends to change unless you use something like a secure hash, which is obviously not something you want to see in your method names. So I really dislike name mangling. Java doesn't have value types, so essentially IKVM just boxes them most of the time. It's fairly simple, it's not very exciting. You cannot define the value types in Java, but you can use them. And there are some optimizations to avoid boxing in some common cases, but you should consider them boxed. Then there are enums in .NET. Enums in .NET are very different from enums in Java. .NET enums are like C, C++, or does C have enums? I don't even remember. So they're just integers with bits or whatever you want to put in them. Whereas in Java, an enum is an actual object. So they're not at all compatible. But I do map the two in some ways. And this is primarily for interoperability with custom attributes and annotations. So custom attributes, annotations, I should say, use enums. Custom attributes use enums. So you want to be able to use those. So here's an example. Day of week extends system enum. In this case, we're actually defining an enum, I think. Oh, no, we're not defining an enum. We're looking at the decompiled code of the stub compiler. So this is a .NET day of week enum. It just has a bunch of integer fields, and then it has a wrap method, a static wrap method that is introduced that wraps the integer and returns essentially a boxed enum. And the boxing is optimized away in the common cases. And it has a value field, which is essentially the getter method of extract the integer value. So this allows you to, in this case it's not relevant, but this allows you to do bit twiddling where you can just, or gather these values And then once you're done ordering them together, you can use call the wrap to create the actual enum that you can then pass into method. So the primary reason for this construct is that it allows method overloading on enums to work properly. You could also say, well, I'm just going to replace all the enums with the underlying integral type. But in that case, you run into the name mangling problem again. You have to start mangling names to avoid collisions. And this is much nicer. Stop doing twice. Properties and events. So here I took the lazy route because when I can avoid it, I tried not doing any work. So .NET properties are just some semantic metadata over a bunch of methods. So in this case, you have a with property, and it includes a set underscore with method. So you can just call that directly. Why bother doing lots of complicated stuff? Same for events. Form closing event, you can say add underscore form closing. This is how you use a delegate. It's a little bit convoluted. So this is the actual delegate type, form closing event handler. And then it has an inner interface called methods that we saw earlier on runnable. I didn't go into it, but there's this method interface that contains a single method called invoke with the signature of the delegate. And then you instantiate, essentially, this is an anonymous inner class that implements this interface, and you pass this into the delegate. Okay, let's switch to some code. So this is Eclipse that I don't use, by the way. This is an old version as well. Here you can see that I've referenced mscorelib, system.jar, system.windows.forms.jar. So these jars are, those are the jars generated by the IKVM stub tool that takes a .NET assembly and then generates the equivalent Java jar that contains empty classes that are needed to compile against. So they don't have any runtime function, but they satisfy Java C or Eclipse. But you can actually drill down into them. But here you see all of the types, or namespaces in this case, and then types. That are in mscorelib. So this is just a way to expose all the metadata. Okay, let's look at the code. Okay, so I used some of the things we saw before. I also added a custom attribute. So the obsolete custom attribute, again, the CLI prefix, has an inner annotation class or interface, and it takes parameters this more or less the same way as the custom attribute does. So in this case, obsolete attribute has a constructor that takes a string, so the annotation has a value method of type string. Event handler. Here you see the message box buttons going on. So message box buttons is an enum. It calls the wrap method and it's scrolled off the screen. But here you see the yes, no is one of those integer values. Then you wrap it to get the proper thing. And now I'm explicitly assigning it to a local variable just for this demo purposes, but normally you just pass it in directly. If you pass it in directly, it's not boxed. And here, this thing also, the message box show also returns an enum, and we sort of dereference the enum with the value property to get the integer out. And this is, in reality, this is sort of at the bytecode level, the Java .NET bytecode level, this is a no-op. And we test if it was yes or no. Just to show you it's real, I'll run it, although it's very boring, and it's not a Hello World app. It's just an empty frame. So, but it works. And so what happens when I run this is compiled by the standard Eclipse compiler, and then it calls ikvm.exe, which is the equivalent of java.exe, to start it, and then ikvm loads the class file, JIT compiles it, and runs it. And this whole Eclipse instance, by the way, is running on top of .NET. So, yes, yes, this is.
Is really Eclipse running on the CLR.
Right.
Wow.
So Anders asked, what's the performance like? So what I did here is cheated a little bit, because this is a statically compiled version of Eclipse. So you can actually start Eclipse in dynamic mode, where it just JIT compiles all of the classes and loads it up, and it takes about a minute, 15 seconds to start up. So that's pretty bad, although Eclipse normally also takes a long time to start up. So I don't know what but here I really took the cheated a little bit. I compiled all of the Eclipse code to DLLs, to assemblies. I wrote a little bit of extra code because Eclipse has its own module system. Java doesn't have anything like assemblies, so it has no module system, which you're trying to address for the next version of Java, which you may hear about in the next talk. And so Eclipse has this thing called OSGI, which is a module loading system. And to make that compatible with .NET, I had to write a little bit of code, so maybe about 100 lines, 150 lines of code, to hook into this OSGI thing and load the .NET assemblies instead of the jar files. And then compile everything, and then ngen everything. And then you have an Eclipse that starts up on this not very high performance system. This is a 1.2 gigahertz, 3-year-old ThinkPad. And it starts up in about 12 seconds. And that's actually faster than an Eclipse on Java. And to quickly get into why I did this work, by the way, is because the company called Mainsoft, don't know if I should mention this, but they actually hired me to work on this because they've written a plugin for Outlook using the Eclipse rich client platform. So Eclipse is not just a development environment, it's also a platform for building apps. And they've written this Outlook plugin to integrate with SharePoint or something. And they had some problems with memory footprint on terminal server machines. So when you have lots of clients, each client has to JIT compile the code, and there's a lot of working set associated with that. And when you use .NET and you use ngen, you can actually statically compile and share the pages between the processes. So there's potentially a big performance or memory working set improvement there. So they paid me to do this work, which was kind of cool. Okay. So the other way around, I also want to expose Java to .NET, because that's what it all started with. One of the first goals is to keep IntelliSense clean. This is, I think, one of the really cool features about .NET, is that it actually is designed to be a multi-language environment. And it's not perfect, but you can really see in a lot of areas that a lot of thought went into making it a multi-language platform, even though most people write C# or VB code, some people write F# code, and then there are some other languages, but there's really a lot of infrastructure. And one of the, it's a small feature, but still, I think it's really cool, is that you can actually get rid of the object methods, system.object methods from Javalang object, for example. I'll show you that. And then there's this nasty issue of fields and interfaces. .NET has, Java has the habit of creating constants in interfaces or static fields in interfaces. And C# doesn't expose those. So what I did there is add a hack where there's an inner class __ fields that exposes the fields. Annotations, a bit more work, generics. Okay, so here's an example of a Java annotation applied as a custom attribute. So what IKVMC, which is the static compiler, does is whenever it encounters an annotation, it will generate a corresponding custom attribute by appending the attribute name, if there is no name clash, otherwise it will apply some name mangling. And then you can just apply those. In this case, it's one without parameters, but you can also provide all the parameters. Yes.
And you have a nested type within it?
Right. So this is what it looks like from within Visual Studio. If you look at the interface socket options, it has a method set and get, and then it has a bunch of fields, but the fields are not visible in on the .NET side. So there is this class called underscore underscore fields, which is marked with hide from Java, which makes my runtime know that this is a type that it should not expose to Java code. So when you go reflect on this thing via Java, you will not see this nested type. And here are all the fields. So that makes it a little bit ugly to reference this thing. So you have to say socket options dot underscore fields dot IP multicast. But it's fairly obvious because when you press the dot on socket options, you see, hey, my fields are not there. And then you see underscore underscore fields. Okay, let's go look inside that. Okay, so this is, I'll go quickly, instantiating a Java object, obviously. Instantiating a linked list, so you can use the collection initializer syntax on the linked list because abstract collection implements the add method and it implements IEnumerable. And because it implements IEnumerable, you can also do for each on it. Now with Java 7, there is this try with finally or resource construct, which is basically like using. So that means that everything in Java that implements auto-closable can now be used in the using statement. There are a bunch of extension methods defined in IKVM extensions that allow you to call all of the string methods on .NET strings. So in this case, I'm writing the bytes of hello world by calling get bytes. And here I'm starting a thread. We've already seen that. I'll run this, but it, well, it's very boring. okay, just, I have to move quickly. So this is a depiction of Mads. He's very unhappy because this program, this trivial program, does not compile. Because Java has this feature where you can widen the access of a method. So in the base class, you have a protected abstract method M, and then you have a public override void M. And I used C-sharp syntax here, pseudocode, but this would be Java code. And then if your C-sharp code would try to extend this type, the compiler would give an error message saying, you're not implementing base.m, because it didn't realize that these were the same two methods. This is not a public bug report, by the way. I'm just pointing out a typical thing, because it's totally impossible, even though .NET is a very good platform in trying to support all languages, there are always quirks like this, and I just work around them, because it's possible to work around them. You should. So what the IKVMC compiler does in this case, it adds this thing called underscore underscore workaround base class, underscore underscore derived, which implements the methods and throws an abstract method error. And now Mads is happy.
Base.m, then isn't it going to throw an error instead of calling the derived implementation?
If you call base.m. No, because this one overrides this one again. Okay, so the question is, doesn't if you call base.m, doesn't this throw an exception? But no, because this method is overridden by this method, but this method in turn is overridden by this one. So by the actual implementation here. And you can override it here again.
Why does that work in two steps but not in one step?
Well, that's just the way the C-sharp compiler works. Because it stops analyzing as soon as it sees that it's a concrete method. So this just satisfies this relation here.
Really? So you're...
OK, then there's some magic that I talked about. One cool thing is that if you serialize a .NET exception, it is actually serialized as a COMSON XML internal WS developer server-side exception. Why this crazy exception? Because this is an exception that actually fakes another exception. So you can pass in the class name and the message and the stack trace, I think, even. And so when you serialize a .NET exception and you deserialize it across the wire on a Java, real Java virtual machine, and you print the stack trace, you will actually get the same error message that you had on the .NET side, which is kind of cool. So this is some class that I by luck detected or found in the class library. I talked about those mappings, and then there's quick mention of jarhel. So I mentioned that Java doesn't have a module system. This is very annoying. And another feature of Java jars is that they all tend to depend on each other, and they prefer cyclic dependencies. So that's why the IKVMC compiler has a feature where you can actually compile multiple jars at the same time. So using these curly braces, you can specify multiple jars, multiple output files, and then it figures out the dependencies between them, and you still end up with separate modules, even though you don't have to worry about figuring out the dependencies yourself. So the performance is typically pretty good. .NET often wins on string processing because the .NET string is a pretty clever type. Exception handling performance is not so good, especially when you run on the debugger. People often complain, I have this code that takes 100 times as long under IKVM, and then it turns out that they press F5 in Visual Studio instead of Control F5, and when you press F5, you run under the debugger, and every exception has to be marshaled across the process boundary to the debugger, and the debugger has to say, no, I'm not currently interested in this exception, and that slows things down incredibly. Unhappy users, well, you can read that on my site. Oops, why is it? Okay, maybe we have 1 or 2 minutes for questions. Three.
Have you tried Scala code with this?
Yes. Yes, it works.
And what did you find?
I recently I had to fix a very minor bug where IKVMC would give some warnings for Scala code. It would work perfectly fine, but it turned out that the Scala compiler emitted some references to classes that don't exist. And IKVMC is very conservative. So it always gives warnings when it encounters something it doesn't understand. So I had to change a little bit to get rid of those warnings, but other than that, yeah, it works.
You said you were going to mention generics, I think.
But I ran out of time.
What are the difficulties?
The answer is very easy. Java generics are erased, so at the bytecode level, there is really not much there, and the .NET generics are reified, so it's very hard. I've not been able to come up with a way to make them work together nicely and not create more problems than you solve. So what I say is, on the .NET side, there are no generics. Simple as that.
You didn't talk about the one thing I thought would be challenging about Java, and that's the whole replaceable class loader problem.
I did mention it a little bit. That's the module system problem, the class problem.
Okay.
So when you statically compile, that's a big deal. When you run in dynamic modes, all of the stuff is implemented except one thing, class GC. So .NET 2.0, which is what I'm currently still targeting, doesn't support class GC, so you will leak memory over time. If you build IKVM, if you download the sources and you build it for .NET 4, you will get class GC, but you will run into .NET framework bugs.
So you're just instantiating differently named classes kind of behind the scenes?
Right.
Yeah, got it.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.